Today we begin our program with a story. And it is an interesting story called The Acrobat. This way, ladies and gentlemen, to the big top. The big show is about to start. 50 cents, folks. The greatest bargain in the whole world. Get your tickets now. Only a few more left. This way, folks. Get your tickets. See the world's greatest acrobat, Spallini. See 40 elephants, camels, giraffes, and wild lions. Hurry, folks. The whole show for 50 cents. This way, ladies and gentlemen. Only a few more tickets left. This way, this way. On and on it went. The barker didn't pause for a second. He kept shouting at the crowd for over an hour. The people were milling about, still paying most of the attention to the smaller attraction. The kids were chewing popcorn and carrying soda bottles. Most of the grown-ups were having fun, too. Everyone was young that day. Everyone was having fun. That is, everyone except Spallini. He sat in his dressing room with his hands covering his face. He really had something to be sad about. His real name wasn't Spallini. It was Spiegel. He was a Jew. Not only that, he had once been a good Jew. He hated this kind of life, but fate had dragged him into it somehow. It was a long story. "You're our next, Spallini," came a voice through the door. "Yeah, I know," he mumbled, but nobody heard. Even he didn't hear it. He was thinking. Something kept going around and round in his head. "My name isn't Spallini. It's Spiegel, Spiegel, Spiegel." Suddenly he remembered something. It was the way he jumped from tree to tree when he was a boy. His mother scolded him often for it. She said that he was too reckless, that he would have an accident someday. He remembered. He never listened to his mother. And every day after coming home from cheder, from school, he continued to climb from tree to tree, always managing to try some new twist, some new way of leaping, some new way of keeping his balance. Well, it grew into a career for him. There was that much compensation. He was now a professional acrobat, and one of the best. He had no complaints in that respect. Yet somehow, he wished he had listened to his mother. Somehow, he wished he had never seen a tree. Somehow, he paid too high a price. Oh, but it's a long story. The bell rang in his dressing room. That meant he had 3 more minutes. His mind was filled with his problems. Too many problems to be solved in 3 minutes. And he must have a clear mind when he climbs 200 feet and flirts with death. "You can't become an acrobat." "An acrobat," his mother pleaded with him. "Why not? Think I'm no good? Why, the man at the circus said I showed more promise than any kid he ever saw. I could be making $50 a week in no time. After that, 75, maybe 100. "Of course, my son," answered his mother. "Of course you can. But I wasn't thinking of the money. Think of what you'll have to give up. They won't let you be a Jew in the circus." "Why not? I can be a Jew there as well as anywhere else." "Perhaps you can, but you won't. It will go hard on you, and you'll toss away your religion as quickly as you leap." "I won't, I won't, I won't," he shouted. But that was long ago. His mother was already dead, but her message pounded his brain. She was right. She was a wise woman. He knew it now. He remembered those early days at the circus. He remembered well. They all laughed at him. Those first few weeks when he wore a skullcap at all performances, and it kept falling off. Everyone thought it was part of his act, that he was trying to be a clown and an acrobat at the same time. Later he tried glue, but that was even worse, and he nearly lost all his hair. His hardest task was on the Sabbath. Those first few months when he tried some place to eat in a strange community, they laughed at him. His own troopers ridiculed him. And his boss was the most severe of all. "You must perform on the Sabbath too," he ordered, "or else you're fired." It went hard on him all the way. It was hard to be a Jew among so many heathens in such a strange profession. His mother was right. "You can, but you won't," she said. He could if he fought them all the way, but he didn't. Pretty soon, he succumbed. First, he dropped his hat, and later he stopped being cautious about the food he ate, and finally began performing on the Sabbath. That finished him. He was a Jew in name only. But on one fateful Saturday, his boss said to him, "You're doing great work, Spiegel. You're going places. From now on, you're the star of the show. In the next town, you'll receive top billing. But your name won't attract. We'll have to change it. Something more spectacular. We'll bill you as Spallini the Great. That's it. Spallini." That's the way it happened. Now he wasn't a Jew even in name. It all happened so fast like an avalanche. Spallini the Great. The Great what? His mother would have said, "The Great Chagas." He cried when he remembered his mother. She died on the very day when they billed him as Spallini. The band played "The Man on the Flying Trapeze," his music. He walked out of his dressing room a crushed man. He hated himself. He hated this life. If only somehow he could be rid of all this. No, that couldn't be. He was in too deep to make any changes now. He climbed the rope to get to the topmost platform. He had a curious thought as he climbed. How did it happen that the nearer he had climbed to God's heaven, the further he went from God? If only God would look down upon him now and rescue him before it was too late. He didn't even realize that he was in the midst of his performance. It was all so automatic with him now. A twist of his body, a leap, a twirl through the air, a rope, another leap, back again, another twist. On and on it went, while the music strains floated up to him, and he reacted to it like a mechanical doll swinging to the rhythm of a music box. Suddenly, the music stopped, and he looked down. There was a huge flame licking the canvas walls of the tent, and people were yelling and pushing each other in a mad dash for the exit. In a few moments, the whole tent was like a giant matchbox, which roared with fire. They all forgot about the acrobat perched high on the platform. Men, women, and children screeched with the wild hysteria of a maddened crowd. Like a pack of wild elephants let loose, they stampeded each other, trying to escape a burning death. Spallini was dazed, trying to figure out what happened so unexpectedly. His first impulse was to leap to the ground with the use of one of his ropes. But he couldn't find even one that wasn't burning already. Pretty soon the whole tent and everything in it would be just a mass of ashes. Below him was a sea of flame. He had only one way of escape. He took hold of a rope and climbed upward, his eyes upon that opening at the very top of the tent, just large enough for a man to crawl through. As he looked up, it seemed to him that he was looking straight at God, and he knew that his eyes must be pleading, "Please, God, save me. Save me, even if I don't deserve it." And as he climbed, he kept hoping that he would reach the top before the flames did, and that he would have enough time to save himself. Then everything went blind all at once. Somehow the years rolled back, and he saw himself as a little boy again. It was summer and very hot, and his mouth wanted a drink badly. He walked barefooted through the streets looking for water, but there wasn't anyone anywhere. It seems as if he was the only one in the whole world, and all the rivers were dry. Suddenly, an old woman appeared with a bucket full of water and spilled it all in his face. It cooled his body, but his mouth was still dry. He begged the woman for just a little sip of water, and she said to him, "First you make the proper blessing." "But I've forgotten it," said the little boy. "Try, my son, try hard to remember it," she said. "The blessing for water? Blessed, blessed. Try a little harder," she urged. "You used to know it quite well. Blessed art thou, O Lord, O Lord." "Our God," she prompted him. "Our God, King of the universe." "That's it, son. Go on," she said. "By whose word all things come into being." He recited all at once, glad that he had remembered it after all. "You see, my son," the old woman told him, "it isn't hard to go back and remember. It's never too late to go back if you want to." Then the bucket suddenly was refilled, and she gave the boy to drink. He drank and drank, and it made him cool, so very cool. Then a voice thundered from below. "My God, Mike, turn away that hose. There's a man up there." All eyes went up to the top of the tent, to that small patch of canvas that still remained atop the center pole. The fireman called, and Mike looked up and saw Spallini's body lying across the canvas, his hands still grasping the pole firmly, though his entire body was wet and unconscious. "Lift the ladder up there and take him down. Can you beat that? The whole tent burns down and the guy hangs up there. Lucky for him, we put the blaze out just in time." Spallini was in the hospital when he regained consciousness. His lips still kept muttering, "Blessed art thou, O Lord." It reminded him of the vision he saw of the old woman and the water. Of course, it was his mother. Who else? She was the one who really saved his life. She must have prayed awful hard in her heaven. Poor woman. How he had betrayed her and all that she taught him when he was young. But never again. She told him that it was never too late to repent. The circus was all washed up. He had a new tent now, and in it he would soar to even greater heights. It was the tent of Jacob.
And so, Kindlech, I do hope you enjoyed the story, and I hope that you learned a very important lesson. It's never, never too late, and the sooner you understand and realize how important it is to live like a Jewish Kindlech have to live, the better it's going to be for everybody involved.